And yes, I'm really excited. This is the first of 9 public meetings, and so thank you all for being part of the guinea pigs for the first public meeting. We're really excited to share this with you, and even more excited to hear what you think. So I just wanted to start with a couple of thoughts. First, thanks to Kathleen and Meredith for hosting us in Maine, and this is going to be one of 3 public meetings in Maine. We'll be in Ellsworth, and then we'll also be in Portland. And I'll put the schedule of those up toward the end. But we wanted to spend a lot of time on your coast talking to various communities. Okay, so first, just wanted to talk a little bit about why we needed to do this, in our opinion. There's sort of three main reasons. First, the ocean's a really busy space. This map gets at some of that. My head's sort of in the way, but we all know that there are a lot of critical traditional uses that are really important to our culture and economy. Things like fishing, shipping, etc. There are also a number of new and expanding uses that are right on our doorstep, particularly here in New England. We've got the first offshore wind farm being constructed right now off of Block Island, with more to come in southern New England. We've got new offshore longline mussel, blue mussel aquaculture projects being permitted. We can also anticipate the need to figure out how to re-nourish our beaches that will be eroding in terms of increased severity and frequency of storms, and what to do about sand resources to help with that. So there are a lot of emerging and new issues that this region is going to need to grapple with. And so for that reason, it's very important to have this kind of regional conversation about this. The second reason is the fact that our ocean ecosystem is rapidly changing. I think we all realize that, whether it's ocean acidification, changing sea surface temperatures, this is all impacting and shifting the marine life that is out there. And there's increasing concern among the public for the health and sustainability of our marine ecosystem. So we need to better understand that and understand how it's changing. The third reason, I would say, is the fact that there isn't really one comprehensive way in government to really take a holistic view of what's going on out there. There are over 140 different laws that help govern how we manage our oceans. And there's a real need for government at all levels, and not just government, people well outside of government, to have a way to talk about this stuff, to better coordinate, to have better information, to make decisions that are in context of the whole system. Some of these pictures I have to mention are from our baseline assessment. And this picture really helps relay a point, and that is the different values that we have of our New England waters. We've spent a lot of this planning process collecting this kind of information from you all in terms of really understanding what you think is important. Ocean jobs, recreation, spirituality, cultural and maritime history, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot to discuss in terms of what we want to weigh. And we want those values to be part of our, feed right into the design of how we want to move forward with our New England ocean. Okay. So in terms of what this plan does, we know we need to protect the ocean and coastal resources, the traditional uses, and the community character while considering changing environmental conditions and proposed offshore activities, new activities. We've covered that. So what this plan really does is it enables a more informed, proactive, and inclusive decision-making process about our oceans with ecosystem health right at the center as the driver. It will mean, as an outcome, transparency for the public on our decisions, predictability for marine industry, and accountability for government. So the way I'd love you to think about this first plan is really as a very common sense, practical approach, a first step that lets us understand what we know, see it all together, and commit to using that in our decisions in a more transparent way. So this is a first step. It's a foundation for more work to come. More specifically, what this plan does is really give us an unprecedented amount of ocean information. We are now able to characterize what's going on the water and in the water in a way we never have been able to do before. With marine life and habitat information, with ocean activity information, et cetera. It's an online library of peer-reviewed information that we invite you all to really spend some time with and explore on our Northeast Ocean Data Portal, and I'll get into that in a minute. The second thing this plan does is commit federal agencies to use this information in our decision. We are under an executive order here. That's the other driver for doing this work. For the federal government to use this information, all this ocean information, to guide and inform our decisions, both our regulatory and our management decisions under our existing authorities. Third, by understanding a bigger context of what's going on out there, we can understand also what the big issues are. Where are the conflicts? Where are there opportunities for compatibility on the water? And what might be some of those effective resources? Fourth, it's an opportunity to put some best practices in place of how we can work better together across government and with folks out on the water and the public as well. And finally, it's an opportunity to pull together a science and research agenda for the Northeast. We've learned a lot over the past 4 years about what we don't know. And it's an opportunity to make us more competitive as a region, attract some investments to New England to get some of these priorities considered and invested in. So who did this work? As Kathleen mentioned, the National Ocean Policy was signed back in 2010 by this administration, really building on several different administrations of work toward how do we take a more comprehensive, holistic view of our oceans. So this by no means started with this administration. But really what it did was give us sort of a kick to get started on a regional level and bring these folks together. So the executive order really says this is a government folks around the table, but a full public process that's going to be scientifically credible and transparent and robust to get our act together here. And so you can see there we have all six New England states. We've got six federally recognized tribes, nine federal agencies. The New England Fishery Management Council is a full member of this body, and Mark is here to represent them tonight. And then we have two ex officio members from Canada, and New York. I didn't lose any nuts, but maybe I don't know. And so that's really key because, come on, I mean, the New England, as you can see from our map here, the New England region, you know, critters, habitat, ocean uses, they don't respect that jurisdiction, that region. We need to think broader as well. So this effort goes from the coast out to 200 miles offshore. It's really meant to be a salty initiative, really focus on the near and offshore where we kind of lack coordination where we need it. And it goes from the Canadian border down through Long Island Sound. But the point of putting the study area up here, which is a little cut off here, is the fact that in terms of the way we engage folks and the information that we collected, it extends farther south for the reason I just stated. And I also want to point out that, where's Joe? Joe also, from the Navy, he also sits on the Mid-Atlantic ocean planning effort. So all the questions you have about the Mid-Atlantic, you can ask Joe here. But what we tried to do was really overlap these two efforts so that we can have some continuity across the North Atlantic. Okay, let's move on here. So in terms of goals, we have three goals. We took a lot of time, probably about 18 months, to, again, come around to Rockland and talk with you about what do you think is important? How should we approach this? What should be our overarching goals? And we also had to reconcile this among states and tribes and federal agencies and the Fishery Management Council. And so these three goals, although broad, really, really blend all of our values. So the plan puts in place actions to advance these three goals, to promote a healthy ecosystem, to enable effective decisions, and explore compatibility among uses. And really that'll lead us in a direction that'll give us a more comprehensive understanding of our ocean and to try to make some decisions in a more ecosystem context. And so early on, it's important to note that the regional planning body recognized that this is an opportunity to achieve these goals from a regional perspective, okay? So every state has their own jurisdiction and their laws. Every federal agency has their mandates. The tribes have their very interesting perspective in terms of past and present. But really, we all try to look beyond our own purview and really consider regional data products, a regional perspective, and a regional way to engage that would make this bigger than any one organization or entity at the table. Okay, so in terms of how this ocean plan was developed, and maybe Stacey, I don't know if you can do any real-time fixing of screens here, but I wanted to show you the Northeast Ocean Data Portal. How many folks here have had a chance to explore this, for those of you who have been with us all along? A good at least two-thirds of the room. That's awesome. This is really the centerpiece of this plan. This is an online, publicly accessible library of current scientific data and maps that describe human activities, marine life and habitat, and other really important contextual information. All right.
It's not a slideshow.
It's PDF. Oh, it's a PDF. Okay, see? You all are getting it. Okay. So I want you to think of this data portal as a shared and validated knowledge base that's vetted by not just scientists, but ocean users as well. This is, we engage folks, and I'll get into this in a second, but we engage folks in a back and forth in order to put together all of these different maps of marine life. We had over 80 scientists weighing in on the marine life piece and habitat. For every single ocean use that you see up here in these themes, we had industry and interested folks involved in the back and forth of how should we visualize that use on the water. So this really represents not only a stakeholder vetted, but a scientist vetted as well, database of information. This is the first time we've been able to not just view all of these different things in silos, but together. And so when you're exploring this, it's important to play around with this and really start to overlay some of these layers, because that's what tells the story of what's going on out there in the New England Ocean. I also want to say that in addition to a lot of this being existing information and this being an effort of pulling it all in one place, it also identified some gaps that we were able to fill in the past couple of years. Recreational use is one example of that. I'm looking at Melissa Gates here from Surfrider, who helped in that effort. We did a recreational boating survey. We worked with the scuba industry. We worked with the whale watching industry. We talked to recreational coastal users, et cetera, et cetera. That information didn't exist. Now it does. It's in here. So that those kinds of values and uses can be seen on the same map as some of these other more traditional and more better captured uses out there. But the last point I want to make here is the fact that this ocean data portal is one information source that's going to be used to guide and inform decisions. It will never be the only one, but it's an awfully good place to start. Because what this does is really create a common platform of information that everybody can see and everybody can jump off from. So there will be able to flag additional, links to additional studies and other things that you would want to go look at. But this is an awfully good place to start. So I want to make sure that you're not thinking we're selling this as the be-all, end-all, only place you need to go. Okay. In terms, last slide on the process here, we were able to, over the past several years since we started this in 2012, really conduct hundreds of formal and informal gatherings and conversations with folks across New England. Our approach was informed by you. It was adapted over time. It provided both an opportunity for state-based conversations through advisory groups. We had cross-regional discussions before any big formal regional planning body meeting. We tried to be efficient in terms of going to places where people were already gathered for an industry meeting, for example, or the main fisheries forum, or Association of Wind Energy, American Wind Energy Association, or all of these, the Northeast Aquaculture Conference and Exposition, all these sort of existing, events that are bringing those folks together anyway, we were there as well. So we tried to really make it efficient and effective in that way. Okay, why don't I move on? All right, so what we did was we chose 10 ocean topics that reflect important resources and activities on the water because they're important to our culture, they're important to our economy, and they're important to the health of our ecosystem. So what you see here is sort of the lens that a lot of this plan actually looks through to consider what's going on the ocean and what is the status quo in terms of the way things are currently managed and how can we improve the way we make our decisions through better information and better engagement across these topics. All right. So what, and again, we're doing all of this within our existing authorities. So what are the different parts of the plan? All right. So for folks of this, like Richard, who've already looked at this, it's about 198 pages or so. It's big. But I think it's pretty easy to navigate, particularly along those topics. You can really flip to your interest area. But this gives you a general sketch of what's in there. So chapter one describes the region. It also points to a baseline assessment that is not part of the plan, but is a link on our website I encourage everybody to go take a look at. It really is an assessment of a snapshot of the ecosystem and the economy that accompanies this plan, because that is an awfully good place to start. So I encourage everyone to take a look at that as well and provide comment. Chapter 2 really describes the process, which I just touched on. Chapters 3, 4, and 5 describes the activities that the regional planning body will undertake, which in sum total advance our goals. So Chapter 3 describes how are we going to use and maintain the ocean information to guide and inform our decisions. Chapter 4 talks about how we're going to implement the plan, including some best practices for how to coordinate across government and engaging with stakeholders. And Chapter 5 talks about the science and research priorities that I mentioned. Okay, so here we go into the meat of it. All right. Okay, so I've set the stage on process. So so you've heard that the premise is that in order to more successfully manage with an ecosystem perspective, agencies must increasingly work together and be informed by the overarching ecological and socioeconomic context and interactions between ocean resources and activities. So this really requires regional scale information, as we've just seen, access to data and related products, and guidance for how to use the products to inform decisions in a way that the government can work better together to achieve. And this is what Chapter 3 is really all about. I think the real power of this plan is, quite frankly, the commitment from federal agencies to use this plan to guide and inform their regulatory and management decisions within existing authorities. We are the ones under executive order. The federal agencies are. The states and tribes, Fishery Management Council, are all voluntary participants. And we signed a charter to work together, and it's been awesome. It's been great. But the federal agencies have got to comply with this plan. We've got to use this plan. And so Chapter 3 really digs into that. And the first thing it does is give you an overview of all the landscape of existing regulatory processes out there under which, because we have to operate within our existing authorities, under which we're going to use this information, right? So the big ones being National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, the Coastal Zone Management Act, all those leasing and permitting and licensing authorities, natural resource consultations that agencies like NOAA participate in, like, you know, under the Endangered Species Act, under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. You've got this big group of regulatory processes that are really important to understand. And so what I think the beginning of this chapter does really well is just lay it all out. It's not exhaustive, but it hits the big ones so that everybody can have a better understanding of how things kind of work. And that what that also does is sets the boundaries because of what I just said about operating within existing authorities. You've got to do this under our existing mandates. This doesn't create any new regulations or authorities. We've got to figure out a way to be more creative under those existing authorities. It also lays out all the management activities under which we can use this information. So, and I'll give some examples of that. So again, we're using this plan under regulatory and management authorities. And Chapter 3 really gives a nice introduction of that because I'm not a regulator. I had a lot to learn too, and it's a good place to start, I think. And I just want to just show you the structure of this big chapter. And that is what we do is we walk through these 10 topics again. And for every single one of those, what we try to do is give an overview of the importance of that resource. We dig in more to the regulatory and management landscape around that topic, whether it's transportation or recreation or aquaculture. We talk about how we're going to maintain and develop regional data for the portal. So this third one, how are we going to, this data portal is only as good as it is dynamic, right? We can't rely on this to make decisions unless we make a commitment to updating this information on a pretty regular basis. So topic by topic, we walk through and we point to commitments to do that. And then finally, what this chapter does is really walk through how we're going to use it and get more specific in ways that we're going to do things a little differently. And it's important to note that, yes, we go topic by topic here, but this isn't meant to be presented in a silo by silo presentation. It's really, the chapters also really explore the potential interactions and compatibilities and conflicts among and between these uses, so keep an eye out for that. Okay. And I have no idea how I'm doing on time, so I'm just going to move a little faster. Okay. I get this motion from Meredith. That's not good. All right. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to be a little bit more of a give a little bit more of a thumbnail of what you'll see in the plan, and then we can talk more about it in the Q&A. Okay, so on marine life and habitat, again, this section is key. This is really the building blocks of all the other ocean plan products. Okay. Again, we've used a careful stakeholder and scientific vetted process. Over 80 scientists involved. We have products for over 150 different fish, marine mammals, and birds that are in this huge library, thousands of maps of these species that are managed. That's what we're going to be using. But what we also have in this section is documenting the methods that we used on how to produce those products, the limitation of the data products, and the links to additional information sources, because, again, the portal is only one place to go. Here's some examples of some maps for marine life and habitat. On the left, you see an example of one of those individual species maps for long-tailed ducks. If you care about long-tailed ducks. what this does is show the distribution in abundance and consider the scientific certainty of those results. And so if you're interested in that species, if your job is to protect that species, if you're wanting to propose a project and you want to mitigate the impact to that species, these are really good places to go in terms of individual species. The second kind of map is a habitat map. Here you've got some deep water corals up here. As just one example, we have lots of maps in there on the biological and the physical habitats that are in this in the Northeast Ocean, and that gives us a really good sense of ecosystem dynamics. And then the third type of map is a summary map. Okay, so what we did was we didn't want to just throw thousands of maps out on the portal and say, have at it, go use it, we've done our job here. What we really want to do is make this a little bit more useful in terms of lumping these species in a way that we need to lump them to make decisions. This is an example of whales that are sensitive to high-frequency noise. Okay, this is a stressor map. We have other examples like this. For example, birds with higher collision and displacement risk from offshore energy, for example. This is the kind of stuff we need to know. Other examples of summary maps include lumping them in terms of regulatory species. All the ESA, the Endangered Species Act listed whales, for example. All the fish that happen to be managed under one fishery management plan for the Fishery Management Council. That's another example of how we've lumped species in various maps to be more useful. And finally, we lump them in terms of ecological and biological reasons. If they share a similar life history, we lump them. So, for example, birds that share a foraging guild or behave similarly during their life history, we lump those. That gives us a more ecosystem perspective when we're looking at some of this information. Okay, so one component of ecosystem-based management, again, striving to take an ecosystem holistic approach here to management, is considering the identification of important ecological areas. And so we have all this data, and we need to know what it means. What do we do with this? How do we make sense of it? So what we have in this plan for your review is a framework, an approach for how to go about doing that. And we'd really love you to take a look at that and let us know what you think. We've stood up an ecosystem-based management work group to help us with this that's outside of government. We define important ecological area right here as habitat areas and species, guilds, communities, critical to ecosystem function, recovery, and resilience. And then what we've done is we've chosen five components, and we've done our homework. We've gone and said, do we have adequate information to actually map areas of high productivity, areas of biodiversity, areas of high species abundance, which also includes feeding and breeding and spawning areas and migratory routes, those types of things. Do we have that kind of information to even feed these, to make a map of those things? And the answer is, some. For some, maybe. For some, not really. And that really lent itself to some of those science and research priorities, the next steps that we're going to need to take. But this is ongoing work. And it's really important that, you know, we're trying to schedule a meeting in August, for example. So this is ongoing work. It's an ongoing conversation. Please let us know what you think about this framework that's in the plan to move in this direction in terms of understanding where some important ecological areas might be and how those, you know, what kind of methods would work to understand how those are going to change over time with a changing climate.